For those of you who don't know, I'm a retired United Methodist minister. I served, well, this be 50th year now, I guess, 51st year, something like that. I served 46 years consecutively. Last church, we had, five services, I guess, with two traditional and one contemporary, and then we had a couple satellite campuses. But one thing we always did, we always celebrated Advent. Now, not all churches celebrate Advent. It's when the church prepares for the coming of the Christ child. It is the 4 weeks prior to Christmas. It's sort of like Lent for Easter, you know, it's that season of preparation. And I just want you to know, folks, that it is the church that announces the Christmas season. It's not Walmart. Walmart announced it, we'd been celebrated back at Halloween, you know. It's not even Macy's. It's not Macy's. I know a couple of Thursdays ago they had this grand parade, and at the end there was Santa Claus waving to the people, and the announcer said, now it's the start of the Christmas season. No. It's the church that announces the beginning of the season. Last Sunday, Greg preached a wonderful sermon. It was the first Sunday of Advent last Sunday. Preached a wonderful sermon about getting through these holidays and how to approach them and move through them. Today is the second Sunday of Advent. By the way, I need to thank Greg for allowing me this privilege of preaching, because I know as a senior pastor, you hesitate to give up the pulpit to a stranger, because years of hard and fruitful planning could be undone by one bad preacher and one bad sermon. So thank you, Greg, for the divine privilege. Anyhow, the word Advent comes from a Latin word. It means to come. And I said it's those 4 Sundays prior to Christmas. And the church has been celebrating Advent, the season of preparation, for centuries. Now, having said this, you know, that this is a season for the preparing of the coming of the Christ child, I have to confess that I am ill-prepared and ill-equipped for the welcoming of the Christ child, or for any child, for that matter. But it's not my fault. I was raised back in the day when fathers were not really encouraged or even allowed to be near babies. Back in the day, my younger years, we were not supposed to be near children. Try to imagine this. When our son Ben, our firstborn, was born, I was told to go wait in the father's waiting room. A small little room down at the end of the maternity ward had a small TV, those old chrome and naugahyde black chairs, and some outdated magazines. And I wasn't allowed in the delivery room, you know. In fact, I'm not even sure fathers were welcomed at all on the maternity floor. We were just sort of pushed off into the side. The only connection that I had with my wife during that time was that in the father's waiting room, there was a door that separated the father's waiting room from the maternity ward. And in that door, there was an 8x10 window. And every now and then, I could walk past that window, pace past it, and I'd look down to see if I could see anything down the hallway. And I remember one time I was looking through the window, and a nurse came from the left side of the hallway, and she had something in her arms. It was purple and slimy and had gauze hanging off of it. It looked like it was something from an alien movie, you know. And she came across the hallway. I don't know why they didn't have them in those little push bumper cars, you know, those plastic things they move around in. And she went to the other side, and I remember thinking to myself, oh, Lord, I hope that's not mine. And it turned out it was mine. Our son didn't breathe right away at the first. Now, fortunately, that all rectified itself, and he cleaned up pretty good. Now he's, to this day, he's frankly nearly as good-looking and intelligent and humble as his father is. But back then, we weren't too sure. I didn't find out any of this until after I saw my wife. But even seeing her was problematic. After our son was born, I went back to be with Linda, and I guess, I don't know if I stayed too long or what, but I remember leaving her room And I ran into a nurse in the hallway with a baby in her arms. Again, they weren't in the little plastic bumper carts. They were carrying babies back then. And I was coming out of my wife's room, and the nurse was coming toward me from the nursery, and she saw me, and she pulled the baby back, and she said, "You can't be in here." And so literally, I had to turn my back to the wall, or face to the wall, and sidestep out. You'd thought I had the black plague, because we're just not supposed to be near the children. Back in those days, fathers were not to be trusted with babies. It's not like today, you know, where fathers are invited into the delivery room to cut the cord without any medical training whatsoever. I mean, they invite anybody to watch the birth. Yeah, custodian, come on in, we're having a party in here. Of course, back in the day, fathers didn't really have a meaningful role, many of us didn't, in the raising of children. The burden, and the privilege of raising children fell primarily to the mother. I was never really very good with babies. I guess I'm explaining why. However, I think I've gotten better with age, you know, particularly with the birth of the grandchildren. That's the wonderful thing about grandchildren. You get a mulligan. You get a do-over, you know? All the things that you did with your children that you shouldn't have done and all the things you didn't do that you should have done, you get to fix with your grandchildren. Our daughter and son look at us sometimes and they watch us behave, how we behave with their children, and then they think to themselves, who are these people? We didn't get raised like this. All this is to explain why I'm not very good at holding or caring for babies. That's not to say that I don't appreciate the privilege of holding a baby. It was my practice when I had my own churches to always go to the hospital whenever a woman from our church was giving birth. I had a pretty good system where people in the hospital would call me, or I had the parents call me, and I would oftentimes get to the hospital before anybody else, before the grandparents, before aunts and uncles, before close neighbors or friends. I would be there. And I enjoyed the real neat experience of praying with families newly created, to pray for their babies and praying for them as they raise this child and praying with thankfulness for this miracle that they got to participate in with God. It was a wonderful time. And a lot of times, you wouldn't believe this, but a lot of times the nurses thought I was the father, because I was there so fast. It was a wonderful experience. I remember one time in Columbus, a dear family in the church had twins, and I was there right away, and the father had just gotten there, I guess, and the nurse came in with the two little plastic bumper cars with the babies in them, and she gave one of the babies to the father, and she was going to give the other baby to the mother, and the mother, who had already held the baby, said, "Give it to him." So I get to hold this baby before the father gets to hold the baby. It is a divine privilege, really, to be able to do that. In fact, that's what this season is all about. I cannot think of a more trusting, endearing, loving question than somebody saying to you, "Want to hold the baby?" That's the long way of getting to today's text. Simeon was a righteous and devout man. He's living in Jerusalem. He's anxiously awaiting, along with many others in Israel at that time, the arrival of God's promised Messiah. God had singled out Simeon and told him that he would not die until his eyes beheld the promised one. One day, the Spirit moves Simeon to go to the temple. I don't know that it's necessarily Simeon's usual time to go to the temple, but Simeon is one who follows the gentle promptings of God, and so he goes. And he's constantly looking through the nursery window, as it were, at those little eggshell cartons lined up of all the babies to see if one of those little bologna loaves is the Messiah. And while he is there, he meets Mary and Joseph. And they're bringing the eight-day-old Jesus to the temple for his dedication. What happens next is frankly unclear, but the results are known. Simeon ends up holding the baby. In fact, this is the only place in the Bible, I could be wrong here, I think it's the only place in the Bible where anybody is seen holding Jesus. I know I've been to St. Peter's and I've seen the Pietà, beautiful, beautiful sculpture, but I'm not sure that's necessarily scriptural. It's just a beautiful piece of art of how Mary might have felt. But here we find out in verse 28, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God. And then it goes on to tell the nature of his praise. But no, here's the thing to notice. How did Simeon end up with the baby Jesus? I mean, it's not likely he rushed up to Mary and grabbed the child out of her arms. That's probably not what happened. Maybe he asked if he could hold the child. Maybe Mary saw the longing in the old man's eyes, and she asked him if he wanted to hold the baby. Want to hold the baby? Oh, said Simeon, do I? I'd love to hold the baby, the redeeming, the salvation of the world. For this is the light of the world. This is the redeeming of all humankind. This is the question God asks of us every Advent. Do you want to hold the baby? And there is that in that question a challenge for those of us who would be Christians. For those of you who in this room who have children, and I know not everybody has children, but do you remember, if you have children, the apprehension you faced when you squarely eyed the prospect of being a new parent? I know as a man, I was probably too clueless as to realize what I was getting into, becoming a parent. I had no idea what it would take to potty train a toddler or talk to a teenager. It was well beyond me. I do remember thinking that life would be very different now. This was going to be a big challenge, and I wondered if I was up to the task. As a parent, have you ever felt that way if you're a parent? I mean, there aren't any courses on parenting, at least there wasn't in my day. There's no qualifying test or entrance exam becoming a parent. I was living proof that almost any idiot could father a child. But could any idiot be a good father? Trusting, loving, strong. But then I discovered something along the way. In fact, as I only discovered long after the fact, it wasn't just that my wife and I raised two kids. It was that our kids raised two parents. I didn't know anything about this parenting thing, but I learned as I went. You know, making stupid mistakes, learning by trial and error, and that's just what happens when we take on the Christ child. You take Jesus into your life, this child of Bethlehem, and folks, you're in for it. You don't really know what you're getting into, and you really don't know where you're going to end up. All you know is that things are going to be very different now. But not to worry. It's not so much that you're raising Jesus. The truth is, he is raising you. Oh, to be sure, you're going to make some mistakes in your Christian journey. Terrible mistakes. You'll even hurt the Christ child from time to time. But you will not break him. Jesus is not nearly concerned, you see, about your abilities as he is your availability. It's on-the-job training, you know. I heard a saying one time, it's an old saying, that the woods would be silent if only those birds sang that sang a perfect tune. Well, Christianity would not be anywhere existent on this planet if only the Christians who practice it perfectly practiced it. There is a challenge in that question. Want to hold the baby? Now, next, see that beyond the challenge of the unknown and the awesome responsibility, there is an awesome responsibility. There's a lot of work to be done in having a baby. I guess it's for this reason that some people choose not to have children. At least these people are smart enough to look at the prospect and see that having children means work, hard work and sacrifice, and their lives will never be the same if they decide to go down that path again. Now, unfortunately, these folks may not realize that this is the most rewarding work of all, and the benefits far outweigh the cost. Life will never be the same, of course, when you take the child, but that's a good thing. Now, there are times when it's so frustrating and so aggravating, you understand why some mammals eat their young, you know. It gets so frustrating. And you've probably all heard the old saying, insanity is hereditary. You get it from your kids, you know. Raising toddlers and teens is like nailing Jell-O to a tree. It's just difficult to do. I remember when our children were quite young, I would babysit the children. The fact that I said that I babysat the children indicates how much I was involved in their raising. Linda raised and nurtured and cared for the children primarily, and I babysat them. But I remember every time she would leave the house, invariably, the children decided that that was the time to load their diapers. The door would shut, and the grunting would begin. I think they saved it up for me because I shouldn't admit this, but I have a gag reflex. When I smell something bad, I just wanted to let them sit there and simmer in it until Mom got home, because it's just a messy job. It's a hard job raising kids. When Linda was delivering our firstborn, we were at Parkside Hospital, little hospital in Toledo, Ohio, and there must have been a full moon because there was no room anywhere in the maternity floor. And so for a while, she and I were out in the hallway. They had to put a bed in the hallway for us. And down the hallway, in one of the delivery rooms, there was a woman that was screaming in pain, which, needless to say, unnerved us, her particularly. You know, you got this woman screaming in pain during delivery, and she wouldn't stop. And I guess the doctor must have gotten exasperated, because I remember my wife telling me that eventually the doctor said, "Lady, you don't realize it, but this is about the easiest time you're ever going to have with this child." You know? And so it is with Christ. It's hard work, having the Christ child. You know, some people, they want to treat the Christ child like grandparents are with grandchildren. You know, as grandparents, you can send the kids home when you're tired or exhausted or they're too much for you. And you get to have the kids for all the good times, you know, with the fun, the joy, the strength, the peace that the Christ child brings. You want that, but there's another side to the coin. If you take up this Christ as your own, there's work, real work involved. It means a sacrifice of your time and your talent and your money. Just as with your own child, once you take this Jesus into your life, you discover that your life's not your own anymore. It revolves around Him and rotates around the needs of this one child. And so you do whatever it takes, even down to your last breath and penny. It is not easy picking up the sacrificial life, giving yourself until you think there's nothing left to give, by caring for the sick, by feeding the hungry, by clothing the naked, by caring for those who have misbehaved. When you take Christ seriously, you become a parent to the world, needs, and troubles. It's no wonder so many people looking at the prospect of Christianity have turned away. It just means hard work. Some people say that Christianity has been tried and found wanting. The theologian, preacher G.K. Chesterton spoke this truth. He said, "The Christian ideal has not been tried and found wanting. It has been found difficult and left untried." It just means work. But just like with raising your own children, if you have them, for all the toil and looking back, you can see there is no more rewarding, important work in the world than this. So the question every Advent is, want to hold the baby? Now finally, and I know you've been waiting a long time for me to say those words, finally, please see that there is, in this word, not just a compliment, and not just a challenge or chores. There is a compliment that's tied up in the godly question, want to hold the baby. I remember when our daughter was pregnant with Ella, the first time I got to touch her belly. Now, this is not something you usually do, you know. I know when you see a pregnant woman, they're sort of like a magnet in their belly, and you just want to reach. You don't do that. But every now and then, you know, your daughter will invite, our daughter invited me to touch her belly, which is a whole new level of intimacy and relationship. You're putting your hand on the future. Wasn't it Carl Sandburg who said, a baby is God's opinion that the world shall go on? You know, and you just, it's just an incredible, beautiful thing. And that's what God is doing when he comes to us and says, do you want to hold the baby? This is honoring stuff. This is, God is trusting the most valuable thing in all of creation into your care. At Advent, God stands before us with outstretched arms and says, you want to hold the baby. It's an invitation to a new and deeper relationship. You say, but Lord, I'm not able. I'm not worthy. In fact, Lord, I might abuse your child. I might even do something worse, ignore your child. You cannot possibly be asking this question of me. I mean, Lord, you've seen the state of the world. You've seen the stuff in the newspapers. You've watched the television reports. You've seen the crime and the wars and the hatred and the political division and the battles over gender identification and abortion. And you've seen the addictions and the divorces and the custody battles. And surely, Lord, you've noticed in my own personal life how selfish I can be, how quick to anger I can be, how judgmental I can be, how slow to forgive I can be. You've noticed all these things, Lord. God, you have no idea what I will do, indeed what we will do with this child. And you know what God says? Yes, I do. I do. Do you want to hold the baby? You see, in most churches, good churches, we spend a lot of time telling people it's important to believe in Jesus, to trust Jesus Christ. But there's the other side of the coin. It's important for you to know that God believes in us. Do you realize that? That God has trusted us with God's self. God has placed God's self into our care. It is an amazing thing. One day God is in heaven and he's contemplating how to save the world, to redeem the world, to give to the world purpose and meaning and hope. And God decides to send himself, his son, to a poor peasant family in Bethlehem. And this child's going to be born in a cave and raised in a feed box. And God is watching from over the banister of heaven, looking down at the nativity tableau. And the angel Gabriel comes up alongside of God. And Gabriel says to God, what is your plan if this fails? And you know what God said? God said, I have no other plan. The question this morning is very simple. There's a challenge in it, chores in it, compliment in it, but it's a good question. Do you want to hold the baby? Do you? Amen. Would you please stand, folks? It's time for the benediction. For us to go about carrying the Christ child into the world. Now may the goodness of God, the peace of God, the grace and love of God go with you all till we gather again in the Lord's name. Amen.